Welcome back to They Talk Sex podcast. I'm your host, Elle Stanger. This is the masturbation and sexuality episode. Our guest is a returning guest. This is Dr. Eric Sprenkel. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm so glad. The Satanism and sexuality episode is still one of the ones that I hear the most feedback about.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, that's great. That was a fun chat we had.
That's one of my favorites too, because I was just delighted at how many things I learned. And those things also validated my world point. So sorry about the obvious bias, but
right.
So we're going to talk about masturbation. Let's catch up on you. So Dr. Eric Sprenkel, if you're unfamiliar with his writing or his tweets or any of his other work, is a professor of clinical psychology and a co-director of the Sexuality Studies Program at Minnesota State University, Mankato. He is a licensed clinical psychologist and an ASECT certified sex therapist affiliated with Minnesota Sexual Health Institute. He just wrote his first book that is DIY, The Wonderfully Weird History and Science of Masturbation. So we're going to explore some misinformation, some pseudoscience and shaming, and other things on the topic of masturbation. So you can find him on Twitter at Dr. Sprenkel and website the same. So the last time we were here, I think it was 2021. Mm-hmm. We talked about Satanism and sexuality. So what has changed for you in that time? And then why did you decide to write the book about masturbation?
Yeah, I really have no idea what's happened since then. I feel like time has lost all meaning. Yeah, pandemic has really just kind of fucked with my brain in a lot of different ways, with time perception and like, what am I doing? And yeah, things just keep going forward. But yeah, last time we talked, 2021, I had to look that up myself, kind of like what I was doing at that time. I was definitely focused in on that satanic research and kind of the topic of that conversation. But I'm still doing some devilish things, primarily mentoring satanic research of my grad students. But I did put a pause on me leading original research on that. I did get promoted to full professor since then. And that was actually, for me, on an emotional level, a bigger deal than getting tenure, because I have zero interest in going into any kind of like academic administration. That just seems like an awful existence. So faculty line wise, like I'm at the highest you can get with faculty. It goes assistant, associate, and then full. And so that really kind of took a pressure off of me. The evaluation that I'll go under now is like every 4 years, and I have a lot more freedom of like what I can do. And I've kind of like proven myself, so to speak, that I've got this far, and I'm not going to go for any other promotions. Like this is it. And so I really wanted to start looking at, well, what do I want to do with my job now? How can I've always been working on streamlining it, making sure that I'm the most efficient with the work that I have to do to give myself much more flexibility and downtime, better work-life balance, all of that. And so I stopped doing like original research for myself, where I'd be like a first author on a paper that gets published in a scientific journal. So moved into more of just mentoring the students that I have. And then, but around 2021, so it should have been like shortly after our last conversation, some things started popping up on social media that got my attention as it relates to masturbation. And then I started digging into that. And that's kind of, that started the focus of developing this book idea. And it's certainly been all encompassing since then.
So you said you saw some things that caught your attention in terms of like pivoting. Was it like, I think I know what they might be, but can you, what did that look like? What things caught your attention?
So there were just some comments on my Instagram posts that dealt with masturbation, something like saying masturbation is healthy or have a worry-free orgasm today. Things that I thought were pretty innocuous to say. And then these dudes came out of the woodwork and just started saying that I'm very unethical and I'm unprofessional because I need to be warning my fans and my followers of all the negative health effects of masturbation. They started listing all these things of like depression and social anxiety and loss of testosterone. I was like, where the fuck is this coming from? I don't think this person just made it up. I'm assuming he read it someplace. So I also wanted to understand, like, why is he believing this? Like, what function is this having in his life? And so that really kind of sparked my interest in better understanding this kind of anti-masturbation attitudes and like this belief that masturbation causes hairy palms and going blind, like what I assumed we all grew out of, like in elementary school.
That belief.
We may have heard that. Yeah, right, yeah. It's like, right. Okay, that's kind of ridiculous. That's silly. But no, that type of thinking still largely exists in a lot of different segments in our population. And I just wanted to kind of understand that a little bit more.
I wish that I could be a fly on a wall and observe like cultural patterns, but I've gotten more of it too in the last 6 to 8 years of my like 20 years of being on the internet and so for a lot of my time on the internet, I function as a sexy lady. Okay. Trying to attract dudes that are probably going to touch themselves to my photos at some point, you know, and maybe women. But for the first time in all this time, yeah, I started hearing stuff like that too. And they're like, as a sex educator, you need to warn people on the dangers of porn is one I get a lot, which I'm like, okay, yeah, let's talk about workers' rights. That's not what they mean.
Right.
But I actually 2 years ago, two or three. So around this time that you maybe noticed this wave, I started hearing this from men in the strip club.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like a man at my stage. I don't even remember how it came up, but he said something about how it's not good for men, how it's okay for females, but it's not okay for men. And I kind of paused there, like naked with my tits out. And I'm like, why do you think that?
Right.
And so I don't know if you've heard this one before, but even after I have, you know, said like, you know, what if I told you I've had like a few years of specific education like around this, or like I'm certified to teach like on this topic, what if I told you that that's actually not true, and like here's some other, you know, pieces of information? And he said to me, and tell me if you've heard this one before because I hadn't, that it was in my best interest as someone in the sex industries to be promoting masturbation because I make more money that way.
Right. Yeah, we're shills.
I've heard shill, but I hadn't heard it explained to where I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard variations of that. Definitely, like, I have contracts with like Pornhub or something. They're paying me to say things that I do online. But yeah, that once they see that I'm a sex educator and also that, you know, I'm a licensed psychologist and sex therapist, they think, oh, I'm doing this because I want to create sex addiction, masturbation addiction, porn addiction in the community because I financially benefit when they seek treatment for that. And so, yeah, there's a lot of conspiratorial beliefs that are definitely wrapped up into anti-masturbation nonsense.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, solidarity, like, honestly, seeing some of like other people's and your posts about like, I think the frustration or like, this is why we need sex ed makes me feel less alone. So thanks for being here to,
Yeah. You're definitely not alone. And I understand that frustration too, of you like pulling rank. And I think that's necessary to do sometimes because you're coming up against a lot of misinformation and you do have the education and training to kind of set the record straight. And it's just not believed by the people that you're telling. And I've come across that too. And they get to the point too, where I'm like spouting all these facts to debunk their myths that they're coming at me with. And then ultimately they just say something like, well, you know, you can have your opinion. I can have mine. I'm like, whoa. We're not talking opinions here, right? We're talking about medical science.
What's that, that horrible Ben Shapiro quote thing, like facts don't have feelings or something like that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry that you feel this way, but obnoxious. Okay. Yeah. So tell us about your book then. I was happy to get a copy in my hot little hands 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. So
great.
I've skipped around a bit and chuckled aloud a handful of times already.
Good. Yeah. That's the main goal.
Yeah,
to cause a chuckle. So basically, it's a humorous look into why we have so many hangups about masturbation. So I go into like the outlandish and the ridiculous concerns, but also addressing some more of the common ones that you see of like how much is too much, what do we do with porn and porn effects and stuff like that. And then I just present the latest research on the topic to set the record straight whether the concerns are valid. And to spoil it, they're not valid. So.
So was there anything that surprised you when writing the book?
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest surprises was how unoriginal the anti-masturbation crusaders of today actually are. And that was kind of my thing, too, because I thought that, okay, this is something new that we're seeing, like with like NoFap or semen retention stuff. Like, so I want to understand like what this is now. Mm-hmm. And I was going to include like the historical stuff in the book just for shits and giggles, right? So I knew about the stories about cornflakes and graham crackers being invented to decrease masturbation. Mm-hmm. So again, just inserting that because they're funny stories or whatever. I didn't realize I would be able to draw a parallel between what was being argued 250 years ago and what is being argued today. Mm-hmm. So like anti-porn arguments are no different than what Dr. Benjamin Rush's concerns about lewd stories were in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. And or his like, concerns. Would it harm the ears?
Yeah, yeah. He was really concerned of like engaging in masturbation at all, especially like in too much of a way. He has a chapter in one of his books called the morbid state of the sexual appetite. And so he was really concerned about sexual desire and kind of reining that in and thinking that going on long horseback rides and like studying math and making sure you're not looking a woman directly in the face are all ways to kind of prevent masturbation. So those are all things.
I know you said long horseback rides and I'm like, are we trying to have like a pubic orgasm? Buddy. Because that doesn't.
Well, that's the funny thing, because there was another physician about 50 years later in Buffalo, New York, Dr. Emery Abbey, and he recommended the opposite. He warned against horseback riding.
Exactly.
Because that could actually unintentionally lead to an orgasm.
Right. I'm thinking about arousal non-concordance. And like, like I wasn't thinking bestiality, but I'm thinking repeated bumping and friction on your genitals for some people is going to cause a reaction. So it's like, oh, how funny. Yeah. Weird how those pieces of info or suggestions are like at odds with each other because they're just bullshit.
Yeah, for sure. So there are a lot of inconsistencies like that across their ideology. And going back to like some of the parallels that I saw are like people today who think vibrators will desensitize clitorises and replace men, no different than politicians in England in the 1700s who criminalized dildos and very dramatically burned them if they were being imported into the country because they were concerned it was an insult to men and masculinity. And now you got these weird semen retention dudes on Reddit who think ejaculation, you know, causes depression, anxiety, loss of testosterone. And they're just repeating what Dr. Kellogg said back in the 1800s, that masturbation causes pimples, heart disease, paralysis. It's all the same. Masturbation anxiety has always been here.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that's really key to come back to, at least in my mind, or when you are seeing these arguments from people. So the anti-porn crusade by men's rights activists is so related to Puritanism in the way that supposed women allies or like women's rights groups will sometimes hate and like pathologize sex workers because it relates to sex. And so it's similar like Victorian era like puritanical viewpoints, but like coming from different places of supposed concern.
Right.
But concerns
it's always
aren't
about
valid.
Concern. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that is like the underlying and or like the foundation of all of this is it's typically within like a religious objection to masturbation. And like masturbation is even not unique in this objection. It's really just an objection to anything that deviates from like Pope approved kind of sexual behavior, which is very, very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And even if someone says that they're not explicitly religious or they're not coming at this from moral grounds, it still provides a justification of why they are so uncomfortable with this topic. And then they'll just invent some like health reasons why they are actually against it. And that's all just made up bullshit. But the core issue here is kind of like this moral discomfort with touching your own genitals.
Mm-hmm. And I want to bring up, and this is like semi-speculation and also related to research, but a lot of people who are sex averse have trauma, you know, either from like their boundaries being pushed on or them witnessing things maybe they didn't want to, or, you know, so child sexual abuse can really relate to this, or domestic violence. Like if you don't associate sex with positives for, you know, very real lived experience reasons, it is something that people will do to feel like they're morally aligning because of the bad experience that they had. They feel like they can protect other people but that's just not how that works. Like, we need safer access, right, and we need literacy around the things that people are going to do with their bodies alone and with others regardless.
Right.
Right. Like, people are going to drink alcohol. So how can we give us information about, like, eating food before, spacing it out with water, you know,
mm-hmm. dealing yeah, with
right?
yeah.
It's harm reduction. How do we teach harm reduction always?
For sure. And that is like an unfortunate effect of negative experiences, especially early on, where someone's like ideology or their position on this topic is really just kind of a projection of that personal experience and trying to make it a universal experience. Mm-hmm. I've seen that a lot. And that's actually helped me deal with a lot of like negative comments I get on social media, of recognizing, oh, this is a you issue. Mm-hmm. Like, this is clearly like I activated something with my post within you personally, and then mm-hmm. you're attacking me because of that and making these generalizations how this applies to everybody. But actually, this is something unique to you.
Mm-hmm. It helps me too. Yeah.
Yeah. It helps kind of take the sting, like, okay, I'm not being attacked personally. It feels that way sometimes, but I understand like where this is coming from.
Mm-hmm. So do any specific comments or feedback stand out to you? Anything that ever just kind of rings back to you, your head? Because I get some one-liners sometimes. I'm like, what a doozy. I wonder where that person is right now.
Right. Yeah. A lot of the grooming stuff.
Ooh, yeah. Bleh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been there. And then the one time I engaged with a guy who called me a groomer for recommending K-12 sex education, and that was the extent of my comment. Mm-hmm. It was a back and forth a little bit, and it kind of unearthed some negative experiences he had as a child, and then was like projecting that then into this conversation and kind of mischaracterizing what sex ed is, thinking it was more like hands-on sex coaching.
Which is his
abuse. Yeah, his abuse history. And I was like, okay, I understand where this is coming from.
Right.
One of the more lighter ones that I think I mentioned in the book was this dude named Tomcat. And so that caught my eye initially. he was an interesting kind of like fire performer, but really into like Taoism and seeming
sounds like a burner.
Really got into like Taoism and semen retention with that. Uh-huh. And so he was trying to argue of how, you know, ejaculation is harmful because it depletes your body of vital nutrients and all this energy loss. And I was feeling masochistic, so I wanted to engage in that a little bit, be like, tell me more, Tomcat, enlighten me. And he was like, okay, yes, I got one here. And so he was very happy to enlighten me on what he believed. And what he was explaining was more about, like, and the confusion for me was what he's explaining on a physical level seemed more to do with orgasm than ejaculation. And so I kind of pushed him on that a little bit, kind of explaining me how this works in physical terms. Mm-hmm. And so I posed the question of like, well, what about somebody who has like, or had like prostate cancer and had their prostate and seminal vesicles removed? And so they don't ejaculate anymore. It's like, what, how does semen retention kind of factor into this and this energy loss? Because they can still have an orgasm. They're just not ejaculating any fluid. And he said something along the lines of, well, the body still benefits from the stored semen that they have. And I was like, wait, okay. Oh, I see. I'm conversing with an idiot here.
Mm-hmm.
Not an idiot just because he's ignorant about this. Like, not everybody knows like what all these body parts are and what they do.
Right.
But an idiot for having like the audacity to think he's an expert in this. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that always rubs me the wrong way, is just the overconfidence that they that they're talking in these areas.
And I
start questioning like my training, be like, okay, I've been doing this like for 20 years, but maybe I missed the day where we talked about where losing semen is very detrimental to your health. Like, I have some level of humility, like, okay, I want to learn about this. They have zero humility with this. Like, they are for certain like what they know is truth.
So what I have noticed, and like, I think this is what happens, is when I interact. Okay, so Oregon has like a shitload of fires every summer. It's really bad. The sky is gray. They say don't go outside, like danger levels, wear a respirator if you have to. And so and there's still plenty. You'll see people outside. But working in the strip club, I have interacted with so many people that just like tell me something, and I realize that's what you have imagined. So now you just believe that that's the case.
Right, right.
I went outside because I was indoors the club all day, I wanted like some sunlight and not the thumping noise. I go outside. There's a handful of men that are regulars there smoking cigars in the backyard in the fire for a couple hours. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, guys, aren't you worried about your lungs? And they're like, oh, no, this is good for it. This is good for your lungs. It makes them it makes them work harder.
Oh, okay.
So it's like exercise for your lungs.
Great. Yeah. See, arguments like that with COVID, it's good to get COVID because it's boosting your immune system. It makes it work harder. Like, that's not how viral infections work at all.
Yeah, no. Or like, it's good to get a broken leg because you've fortified it. No, I have like a fracture that's healed.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a really interesting sometimes. So if that helps people listening or if that helps you, Dr. Sprinkle, sometimes I just I'm like, that's a mechanism, like the light bulb that goes off. I'm like, oh, they've just imagined this scenario. So now that's what they think is true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They want to keep doing this behavior and they found ways to kind of justify it with nonsense.
Yeah. And like, be mindful of how often like any of us do that for ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Right. So, okay. I'm going to read some follower feedback. Mm-hmm. And the question posed to Instagram, my Instagram followers, I am at Stripper Writer. You're Dr. Sprinkle on there too.
Yep, at Dr. Sprinkle. Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, when I logged in this morning, I couldn't load any of my activity, which meant I couldn't do a Jesus post. And I was like, oh, no, not the great start to my morning. But so the question, I finally got access and I could see my responses. The question to followers there, what do you think or feel when you see the word masturbation? And of course, I had to spell masturbation with an asterisk and hope that I don't get flagged for it for soliciting, because that's how Instagram works now. Especially for me. So responses are, I will read, you react.
Okay.
I wish I liked myself enough to jerk off more.
Aw.
Aw, buddy.
That's just sad. That was my knee-jerk reaction. It's like, aw. Yeah.
No, really. Next one says, I think self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure-free pleasure-seeking.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the biggest advantages of masturbation, is that you don't have to worry about anything else other than your own response. So very little pressure involved.
Relaxing now. For years, it was a shameful loss of control. Good for you on not
overcoming that.
Someone says, I think of a aghast mother walking in on her teenage boy with a sock and a magazine, old school. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that happens.
I can see that. Yeah. I grew up with that template in media too.
Right, right.
Yeah. My mother only walked in on me once, I think.
Oh, really?
Because I heard the door shut. I didn't hear it open, but I heard it shut and my back was turned. And I was like, oh, I think she's.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I got caught by every member of my family. I was I was very sloppy with privacy. Like,
yeah,
apparently. Believing that I was in a private spot, but clearly was not.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many people did you have living in your house?
Just three. Two parents and a sister. Older
sister.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So let's see. Someone says, more fun to watch than to do.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. I feel that way sometimes, I guess. But all right. Someone else says, it's a very unsexy word for a sexy activity. Fair.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
I feel that way about vulva.
Vulva.
Yeah. Balls. I mean testicles, really. I want to cup your testicles. Anyway, I don't want to give away too much free content. You subscribers gotta go to the audio place. Yeah. Someone says, reminds me of crustaceans.
Crustaceans.
Little lobster emoji. Masturbation, crustacean. Well, I guess it kind of rhymes.
Yeah. Mollusks. I don't know.
Mollusks. Someone says, I don't love it, but I don't hate it because it's correct. I have a vagina and I say jack off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or jill off if you want to gender.
Right. Jill off. Yeah.
Someone says, I have positive thoughts toward the word and the concept it represents.
That's great.
That's nice. Okay. So I got, I think, more positive. I don't want to like add a value to them, but I think those weren't a ton of negative responses because it's my audience, but
yeah, that's good.
Curious to see what the general population thinks or feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably be skewing a little bit more in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Like if we asked every single person currently, let's just say on the continent of North America from 18 and up, what do you think? be all kinds of different sin.
Yeah.
Nobody says sin even, in my.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Probably not even wanting to answer the question. So avoidance is like a big one.
Right.
And that's sure. The big thing with like masturbation taboo. They talk a little bit with like, where do we learn this shame about masturbation? And it largely just comes from not talking about it, like the so-called silent families. And so I think just a lot of people would avoid even answering it. And that's reflective of their own discomfort. And then that silence gets interpreted as discomfort. And so it's like this masturbation, taboo, anxiety that just gets passed down through the generations like a puritanical heirloom.
I can see it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. This is the masturbation and sexuality episode with Dr. Eric Sprenkel. We will be right back. To all of my webcammers, pornographers, and people who just don't like sleeping in the wet spot, if you want a dark surface that's absorbent and discreet for filming or travel or play, I use regular or extra large sizes of The Layer, L-A-Y-E-R. Online, that's getthelayer.com. It's woman-owned and a small company that donates portions of proceeds to the Trevor Project. Use code L, that's my name, E-L-L-E, for 10% off your absorbent sex blanket. Welcome back to the masturbation and sexuality episode with Dr. Eric Sprenkel. You can find him, if you haven't already, drsprenkel.com. You can learn more about the book DIY, The Wonderfully Weird History and Science of Masturbation. And you can find me on the internet. My name is Elle Stanger. I'm an ASECT certified sex educator. Not therapist. People do ask sometimes. I can give you information and resources and referrals to other people that are therapists. We are going to do some listener questions on masturbation. Listener question one. Can you explain or debunk whether masturbation / ejaculation impacts testosterone or other hormone levels?
Yeah, so the short answer is no. It's not having any impact on your testosterone. The studies that are often cited to support this myth, and they're definitely out there. Like, this is one of the biggest beliefs within, like, masturbation is bad, ejaculation is bad. Research that exists on there, and it's just a couple of studies. One was even retracted. It's widely misunderstood and misinterpreted. So the studies that they're even citing aren't saying what they think they're saying. If it had any impact, it would be a very, very trivial impact and very short lasting. Like, hormones fluctuate all the time for a variety of stimuli. So usually when this issue comes up, and it's typically guys, and either they're younger guys who aren't getting enough gains at the gym, so they're not packing on the muscle mass, and they think that they have low testosterone and they're jack-off habits is causing this, or they're middle-aged dudes that may start noticing a little bit of a slowing decline down with their body. Yeah. And so with these guys, regardless of age, I recommend that, okay, go to your doctor, tell them the symptoms that you're having and that you're concerned about, and if they line up with low testosterone, you'll probably get some blood work done to actually test your numbers. And if you are clinically low, like actually hypogonadal. And so that's the other thing with these studies of like what's going to increase, decrease testosterone. It's never in a clinically significant way. It would always just be like a tiny increase or a tiny decrease.
Really?
But yeah. So, but if you're getting blood work done and you are actually clinically low, so actually hypogonadal, in which hormone replacement treatment would be warranted, I would want you to ask your doctor whether not masturbating will raise your testosterone back to normal levels. And they will say, no, that won't do anything. So that's the thing that I think these false beliefs about, especially with testosterone and masturbation, that they just need to kind of take a step back. And I really kind of blame like the bro science and the biohacking kind of stuff that you see online where they're just trying to optimize their health. And the optimization is really not moving the needle much in a clinically significant direction, but it's a lot of effort to try to get like a smidgen of an increase of something. So with like testosterone, we're talking like most people are within normal range, and the normal range is pretty wide because there is normal fluctuation that exists within that.
A spectrum even.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so if you are like clinically low, like actually hypogonadal, and then you would benefit from testosterone treatment, typically like a gel, like androgel that you would put on your chest every day. But I would want you to ask your physician, when you're talking about treatment options, is like, well, if I stop masturbating, will that raise my testosterone up to normal levels? And no, mm-hmm. it will not. Not even close. And so we have to kind of think a little bit more critically about these kind of like these health directives of thinking that masturbation will actually cure a medical condition like low testosterone. And it's not. It's not going to cure anything.
I like all of that advice. And yet there's so many gym bros and so many men that like don't go to doctors. Like they don't want to get a physical. They don't want to get their prostate checked, you know?
Right.
So that kind of...
Yeah, I know that was a tall ask to go see a physician, right?
Oh, I know, right? I'm thinking of... So my boyfriend is a gym rat, and he wanted to look big, and he was big. And so I see some of the content that is suggested to him, and he says he's never done steroids. He's a drug and alcohol counselor, so he, like, studied the effects to be like, no, I don't want to fuck with that shit. But right. he has friends who have, and I'm not outing anybody here, but definitely just those people became like rageaholics.
if anything.
So, and they didn't go to doctors. They were like getting stuff from a buddy, or, you know, biohacking, like you said.
Yeah.
Right. So frustrating, but I do like the suggestion of going to the doctor, because a lot of us could do that every once in a while anyway, but that's also scary.
Yeah. And David just posed that as a hypothetical. Like, imagine you went to the doctor and asked them, you know, ask the physician, will stopping masturbating increase my testosterone to a healthy level? And I would hope like critical thinking would just be like, well, no, it's not going to have that big of an impact on my hormone levels, which it won't.
Yeah, there are some shitty doctors out there, though, who don't know fuck about all.
Yeah, that's true.
Not you, though. All right, listener question two. Can you talk about what quitting or rehab programs look like or cost? I hear about celebrities going through so-called sex addict rehab, but nobody else.
Yeah, this was an interesting section in my book where I talk about kind of masturbation addiction and how that sold to the public and how it kind of created this multi-million-dollar industry, like this treatment industry. And it's treated similarly as like substance use disorders, chemical dependency. So 12-step programs for on the support level, but for the treatment level involves like residential treatment. And one that I mentioned in the book is called Gentle Path. It's located in Arizona, I think maybe like an hour or so outside of Phoenix. It's a 45-day residential treatment facility. So you're there for 45 days, no phones, no computers, no visitors, just lots of individual and group therapy. The place has a lot of amenities that you would find at like a nudist resort, like sand volleyball and ping pong tables. There's a labyrinth that you can walk around if you want to recreate the final scene in The Shining. There's...
I know you do.
Yeah, I would do that. and all of this could be yours for the very, very reasonable price of $69,000.
Oh, almost 70, because it's almost 70. $69,950.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. A little bit of a discount to like if 70,000 was a little too much, you know, the 69.995 may get you in.
Oh,
but yeah, so I'm reading this and it's like, okay, one, even if it was free, right? Aside from the cost barrier, which the majority of the population, vast majority, would not be able to afford, like 70 grand for like a little over a month of treatment. But even if it was free, 45 days, like who can walk away from their life for 45 days? Or for like work responsibilities, child rearing responsibilities, so everything else of just like leaving it for 6 weeks to go away to like this monastery, essentially, to engage in all this different types of treatment. And you could argue like, well, if the problem is severe enough, well, that could be the best option. Well, there's no evidence to support that residential treatment is effective for masturbation problems. So they're practicing outside of evidence-based care because they're modeling it off of something like, you know, the chemical dependency field. They're modeling it off of something that isn't a really a great analogy for sex-related problems. Even if somebody has problems relating to their masturbation, and I don't deny that masturbation can't be unhealthy for some, and there's a variety of reasons why it can be unhealthy for some. It has little to actually do with masturbation per se and more about their attitudes toward it. But it's not effective, regardless of going into like these 45-day nunneries. And yeah, so it's a waste of time, waste of money. And for what? You're not having the desired outcome at the end.
That makes sense why, yeah, the only person I thought of like David Duchovny because The X-Files was big when I was a kid and he's hot to a lot of people. I, you know, have a little suit and tie crush on him, I guess childhood crush. But so when I heard as a kid that he went to a sex addict thing, I was like, huh, I wonder what that even means. Like, and I've talked to people who have identified as sex addicts, and you probably have too. And there's there's ways that any behavior can be unhealthy. If you isolate from your family, if you don't use like certain precautions on your body, you can do harm to your body by like over rubbing it. Peyronie's, the crooked penis, maybe from just like repeated movement in one way that builds up scar tissue, right? Which can be disruptive for some people. So that's why it's good to like alternate your hands, use lube, try different standing sitting positions.
Right. And the recommendation is not abstinence.
Right. It's not
these
abstinence.
Places like push.
Because
like
that's masturbation stressful. Is bad. Right. That's stressful. Yeah. That would suck. 45 days. I have to be in therapy with a bunch of other strangers for 45 days and I can't talk to any of my comfort people. Of course I would want to masturbate. I want to feel better.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So definitely we're not denying. I don't think we're not denying that like any harm could be done. And we see people doing harm, especially if they're like using their money in ways that their family can't afford, if they're going to. And so that's like an anxiety thing or other issues. So, okay. So we do not endorse the phony baloney non-treatment programs.
Correct.
And they're very expensive.
The little amount of data that exists for treating some type of masturbation problem, it's very small. Like the body of literature over the past 25 years, if you kind of look at what has been studied for like a controlled study, right? And so there was a control group and trying to apply like, oh, the treatment is actually effective because we're doing it at the same time as this other group that's in a control or a placebo study. Those studies, the very few that we have, I think there's like three, do show some promise with like acceptance and commitment type of therapy, where just kind of accepting your sexual desires and learning how to deal with them a little bit more in a healthy way. Some antidepressants, if the masturbation is being used for more so for like emotional regulations, like, well, you need to treat the underlying dysregulation first. It actually has nothing to do with a masturbation problem. That was just the coping mechanism to deal with like an anxiety disorder. So those things show promise. There's no promise showed from what's actually labeled as sex addiction treatment.
I want to bring up, because this was an interesting interaction I recalled, and I wrote about it a little bit on my Patreon, patreon.com/strangebedfellows. But I took a client call on the sex work app that I use, one of them, and he disclosed to me that he was a masturbation addict and a sex addict. You know, that was his language, and that he'd been on regular Depo Provera shots for like a decade prevent his body or his mind from acting out. And the example he gave was that he can't go to like a yoga class because the bodies he would get an erection immediately. So for him, you know, he's like, he was telling me like, this is who I am. I've hurt people before. This is what I do to manage it. And I was very blown away because it felt very insightful. And I think, like, what do we, you know, obviously, what do we do with people in society that like hurt other people or could be a danger? Like, we're not going to murder them. We can't just lock them up. They're complex human beings. So how do we manage them? And I thought this was a really interesting tactic.
Yeah, the chemical castration thing, as it's usually known for. Yeah, don't hear about that too much, of being voluntarily administered. A lot of times
I think he's court required at this point.
Oh, okay. Yeah, at that point. Yeah, so I mean, that raises the question of like, okay, so this person clearly has some type of out of control sexual behavior that is starting to harm others. Is that driven by an uncontrollable sex drive, or are there other characteristics in there that justify and fuel the boundary crossing of others? Because a lot of people have a very, very high sex drive, right?
Included,
masturbate, masturbate multiple times a day, would never and have zero desire to cross boundaries of others.
True.
And so is it like really just about hypersexuality and how to curb that? Or are there other personality characteristics that lend themselves to violence? And actually, that's the problem that needs treated.
Yeah. All right. So, listener question three, historically speaking, what do you observe or speculate is different or similar about attitudes relating to gender and masturbation?
Yeah, this is interesting, because when I first started outlining the book, I thought that it could be entirely gender neutral, and that I'm talking about body parts and I'm talking about behavior, and I don't necessarily have to gender those body parts and those behaviors. But that turned out to be completely impossible to do, because the anti-masturbation attitudes and recommendations are very, very gendered. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the science too on masturbation is gendered in how they talk about their participants. So that became an impossible feat. But so this is really, really wrapped up in idealized masculinity and how masturbation is a threat to that, perceived to be a threat to that.
I'm getting Barbie movie flashbacks, but like different.
Right. So several beliefs here. One, to be a manly man, right, your sexual desire and energy should only be directed toward fucking women. Nothing else. Anything that deviates from that, you're not living up to your what's expected of you as a man to express yourself sexually. So having sex with yourself, you're being less than a man, because you're using that sexual energy, not with a woman. And that's what you're supposed to do as a man.
Oh, God. That's a gateway to just raping us.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of unhealthy things that can be unpacked with these messages. Mm-hmm. It's also believed that masturbating is a sign of giving into temptations. So in this one, it shows a weakness of character, that even if you have an urge to masturbate, you should have the strength, right, to overcome that urge and do something else with your time and your energy and your hands. And then there's the third belief, that masturbating drains you of testosterone or other things like that, that is literally then like quote unquote feminizing you. And so it's believing that masturbation is weakening, physically weakening men, that you're not the manly man that you need to be. And so it largely focuses on men in that way. For women though, masturbation taboo often still circulates around men. So I mentioned earlier about concerns about vibrators and desensitizing clitorises. And often that's rooted in the belief that men will no longer be able to please women. And that's emasculating for a man if they can't compete with a vibrator. And
or so they can't access women in the same way, because we are fucking something else instead of them.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. They don't need us anymore. And they can live without us. And now we're for, there's a barrier. Right. And what they would view as an unjust barrier.
Okay.
And then there's also the sexist belief that reflects a belief about pretty much all of female sexuality, and that it's simply ignored. Right. Believing that women don't have these kinds of desires or urges to masturbate. So there's no need to come up with pseudoscientific scare tactics to prevent them from touching themselves. And this was even mentioned in the Talmud, the Jewish text where rabbis debate Jewish law. One of the early instances of that, where they were explicitly saying things along this line, these rabbis were talking about cautions men need to take when inspecting their genitals in the morning to look for evidence of a nocturnal ejaculation. And so during the inspection, they recommended that guys use a rock to minimize pleasure on their genitals, so they don't accidentally become aroused and then accidentally spill their seed. That's what they were trying to prevent, accidental ejaculation.
A rock.
Yeah, so a rock or a really rough piece of cloth in order to prevent any kind of arousal. And so with women, they believed this isn't really a concern for women, because they're not capable of such arousal from touching their own vulvas.
Well, we don't have like ejaculations that are obvious in the night, but we might have a release or a sexy dream of sorts.
Right, right. And so their belief that, oh, this isn't a concern at all for women, they don't need to do this. And even if they did and they touched their genitals directly, they're not capable of getting aroused in that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to these guys, it was just completely unheard of that women would be able to have sexual desire and to be able to become aroused and orgasmic entirely alone. So that kind of spared them from direct condemnation, but it's still built into this sexist belief of kind of like stripping sexuality and sexual agency from women.
Right. Yeah. The theme that I always kind of hear in my head when I read things like that happened over different places and times is like, for women, it's either like, eh, it's not that big of a deal. Like, mm-hmm. like we don't really care if women are, because we just don't really think they are, or we don't think about it unless we find out they are, and then it's kind of like a waste of time.
Right.
Like why would she do that? Like, bitch, do something else. Like, it's like a weird passive like ignore, but not for the right reasons, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and also kind of denying them the right to do that for themselves for their own reasons, because I've heard too of like if a woman masturbates and they're in a relationship and the guy is like, well, I could have helped you with that. And it's like, well, could have, but that's not the function of that behavior or the motivation to engage in that behavior at that moment. So like, you can sit this one out. That's okay. Masturbation's different from partnered sex. It has different needs and results in different experiences of satisfaction.
Oh, I'm thinking of those like Reddit, am I the asshole? Like, you know, I found out my girlfriend was masturbating. Should I be upset or not? Like for her cheating on me, blah, blah, whatever.
Right.
I've seen that before. Okay. Mm-hmm. So listener question 4, what are the differences between semen and sperm? What about female ejaculate?
Yeah, simply put, semen and sperm, sperm are just the sperm cells developed in the testicles and stored in each of the epididymis attached to the testicle. And then semen is just the broad term for all the fluid that gets ejaculated. Sperm is in the semen unless the person has had a vasectomy, in which case they can still ejaculate the semen, but there's just no sperm cells in it. Mm-hmm. And that's always a fun thing to bring up with semen retentionists and argue kind of like, well, what is actually needed to be retained? Is it sperm cells? Because if so, get a vasectomy and you'll never ejaculate sperm cells again. And this kind of, again, kind of shows their ignorance about human sexual physiology and anatomy, because they don't really understand all of that. Mm-hmm.
Real quick. Anecdotally, I've only had a couple partners that I was having sex with before and after vasectomy, and it doesn't change their like the look or feel of their ejaculate in my experience. Is that typical?
Yeah, that's typical. Vast majority of the fluid coming out is coming from the prostate and the seminal vesicles. And so those would be above the incision line and the vas deferens. So those are untouched and you're still ejaculating all that. It's really just the sperm cells that are now trapped in the vas deferens below the incision line. And that's really it. So no noticeable changes in sexual functioning or ejaculate volume or any of that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Female ejaculate.
Yeah. Female ejaculate. It depends on what we're talking about here. There's a lot of different types of fluid that can be expelled during sexual activity. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just, accumulation of vaginal lubrication that can come out during contractions at orgasm, but that's coming from the vaginal opening. Things that are coming, fluid that is coming out from the urethral opening can be drawing a distinction here between female ejaculate and like squirting or gushing. Mm-hmm. The female ejaculate is more homologous to the prostate fluid in men. It has some of the similar chemical components as prostate fluid, and so it's kind of believed to be developed during embryo from the similar components. The prostate with like the Skene's glands, pretty similar with that. With gushing or squirting, that's believed to come more from the bladder, because it is in such a larger volume that is getting expelled around orgasm. And it doesn't always have to occur with orgasm, but
I could squirt and then go to the bathroom right after and pee and pee and pee. And it's really interesting. I'm not saying this is the case for everybody. Obviously, everyone's different. But my squirt is thinner and clearer. And there's probably definitely some pee in there, but it doesn't seem urine-like.
Right.
So I don't know what is exactly happening, but something feels like it's being squeezed out like a sponge in a really good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why it does have some chemical similarities to diluted urine. And that's kind of where the hangups kind of come with this mm-hmm. fluid of kind of like, is it just pee? And my whole thing is like, and there's been a couple of qualitative studies that it kind of examined women's attitudes about squirting and how they feel about it, the comfort wise, they like it, they don't like it. Mm-hmm. It's really just kind of about, it's a fluid. Does it feel good when it happens? And that's always my focus, like regardless of like what it is, where it's coming from, who looked at it under a microscope to analyze the chemical properties of it, what's the experience like with it? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if there are negative experiences with it, is it because of like physical pain or discomfort, or is it more of like emotional discomfort or embarrassment? And there were comments that you may have received from a partner if it occurs during partnered sex. Mm-hmm. And I really try to have people to kind of think of any kind of fluid that comes out during sex, give it the same liberty that we give semen for the most part. Mm. We give semen so much liberty to go wherever it wants to. And often like it's an indication that sex has been had and completed mm-hmm. or even possibly like satisfied when there's a visual evidence of semen someplace. Why can't we give other bodily fluids that same liberty of just like going where it wants to? And it's evidence that, oh, my body's having some type of reaction here. And does it feel good? That's great. Awesome. Cool. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have to put an extra towel down or whatever, take some more precautions before or clean up afterwards, whatever, have fun. It doesn't really matter where, it's certainly not harmful for you of like wherever it's coming from, whatever the chemical composition is.
Right. The comparison to semen or male ejaculate is a good one, because I'm thinking like my general rule of thumb would be don't get it in my eyes or someone else's eyes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you certainly have boundaries and parameters of like where you would like it to go.
And if you want it in your eyes, like if that gets you off, just flush out your eyes real good right after.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to get really an eye infection, but right. Otherwise, I mean, it could go in your mouth. You're fine.
Right.
All right, cool. So listener question 5, what do you recommend for someone who does want to masturbate less because they spend too much time thinking about it?
Good question. And the clinical psychologist in me is going to come out and not answer this directly. So the cliche answer of it depends. So I would want to know a lot more about what's going on with this question of like, why do you want to reduce the amount? You're saying you're thinking about it too much. How much is too much? Because a lot of times people feel out of control with their sexual behavior. But what we know from the research of those who think that they are doing something too much, that they feel out of control, they've labeled themselves an addict. I think I was reading a study this morning from Dr. Joshua Grubbs, who does a lot of this research on perceived porn addiction. And self-labeling of sex addiction, that oftentimes they have an incidence of 10 or fewer a year of engaging in something that they are distressed about. Mm. So it's really not about frequency.
Wow.
It's more about their attitudes.
The event causes shame.
Yeah. And it's more about the attitudes toward that frequency. So like once is too much. And if you do it once, then you feel out of control because you told yourself, I don't want to do this at all. And so there's a lot of questions I would have for that person of like, why do you think you want to cut back? Like, what kind of impact is it having in your life? Do you have a disapproving partner and that's driving this more so from your own beliefs about it? Is it going against some type of value system that you have? Are you not valuing the behavior? That's a big thing in the anti-masturbation circles. Is this idea of like sexual sublimation. It's like you're wasting time and energy masturbating when that time and energy can be spent on more noble pursuits.
Exactly. Right.
So I would want to know, like, do you feel like, oh, this is just a waste of your time and that you should be training for a marathon or something?
Right.
That's
right.
More socially acceptable and what I would want to do. And here I am just like hunched over a computer and masturbating for a little bit.
It was theorized by one of my mentors that back in the olden days, like when survival is more key, masturbating is definitely to be perceived as self-indulgent when you could be like hunting or foraging or building or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like we are more smart and aware now that people need pleasure to thrive and survive.
Right.
So that's where, yeah, the information comes in about it might help you sleep. Right?
Yeah, yeah. We have a lot of recommendations on how it can be helpful for you. But my thing is really, it's just a moment of pleasure. And it doesn't really have to be more than that. Mm-hmm. And if we value just having a moment of pleasure to ourselves, then maybe we won't view it as this thing that's like taking away from something else that we should be doing.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So this is the Masturbation and Sexuality episode with Dr. Eric Sprankle. We're going to take our last break. Find me, patreon.com/strangebedfellows. I post not safe for work things there that I can't post on my other social media. It is not porn. You can find my porn by going to stripperwriter.com and either the XXX is on the top right or contact me and scroll to the bottom. We will be right back. Anyone who enjoys masturbation knows a really good lube can make a big difference. The makers of Kimono Condoms have unveiled two incredible lubricants designed to make your intimate acts more sensational. Water-based, organic aloe, and botanically charged Kimono Swirl Natural is a smooth, long-lasting, and with natural ingredients and without parabens, alcohol, and glycerin. Or if you want ultra-smooth silicone, Kimono Swirl Silicone adds sensitivity and wetness anywhere you need it, front side, back side, toys, and fingers. Kimono Swirl Lubes make sex sensational with yourself or others. At Mayer Labs, we've got sex down to a science. Use coupon code THEYTALK20 for 20% off your purchase at mayerlabs.com. Look for that code in the episode notes. They talk 20 for 20% off your purchase at mayerlabs.com. Welcome back to They Talk Sex Podcast. Thank you for rating or reviewing us wherever you can that you listen online. We love a 5-star rating. Tell us how we've been helpful for you or reach out to me, theytalksex@protonmail.com. So we're talking masturbation and sexuality and the release of the book DIY, The Wonderfully Weird History and Science of Masturbation by Dr. Eric Sprankle. I have it in my hands and this is going to be a good quick read because the thing about this book is you can read it in order, but you don't have to.
Right. Like. Yeah. Intentionally wrote it that way. I didn't want like this overarching narrative where you had to go in a particular order. Yeah. Jump around, find a topic that works well for you. Read a page. Yeah.
Yeah. Sit back and then reflect on, oh, that's why things are the way they are.
Right.
Right. So I found when I was sourcing, prepping for this episode, so I typed masturbation plus news and this came up and it's so relevant. So this is a article and a 28-minute listen on NPR or OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting. Masturbation abstinence is popular online. Doctors and therapists are worried. This published February 3rd of 2024. So I'm just going to read a couple little pieces. More than two decades of growing internet use has surfaced fears about the social and psychological impacts of nearly unfettered access to pornography. But many researchers and sex therapists worry about the online communities that have formed in response to these fears, that they often endorse inaccurate medical information, exacerbate mental health problems, and in some cases overlap with extremist and hate groups. I'm going to jump around. So while some figures in this space are religious, most frame their advice as science-based forms of self-improvement or as a cure for pornography addiction, a popular concept that's disputed by scientists and researchers who study sexuality. I was so glad to see this because there is a lot of sex negativity, even in so-called progressive or liberal circles, which is what NPR is.
Yeah.
A national poll conducted in late 2020 found that 4 out of 10 Americans believe society has become too, quote, soft and feminine. Okay, so the good news is, Dr. Sprankle, is that there is more writing about these issues. Like, it's not just you against the world.
Right.
Yeah. Where do you, I didn't put this on the outline, but where do you find strength in your endeavor to educate? Like, who inspires or supports you?
It's a good question. I would say writing this book, realizing like what's going on right now with a lot of the misinformation that exists online. Like I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, it's not really new. It's just kind of regurgitated nonsense that's been going on. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that, because I get asked, like, one question I was asked a while ago in one of these interviews was, do I see things as like worse off now or better than it was in the past? And it's always kind of hard to judge that because some things are better, some things are worse. Mm-hmm. And so I think I make the joke early in the book of like, sexual progressiveness is not a linear process. It's always like two orgasms forward, one orgasm back. And so I would argue that maybe we're in a one orgasm back period right now. Largely because of how easy it is for people to find misinformation and share misinformation online right now. I feel like we are lacking kind of the spirit of the 1970s that I talk about a little bit in the book, particularly around Betty Dodson and kind of this idea of liberating masturbation and kind of like the radical activists at that time. I feel like that kind of spirit is missing. And I think that, but I feel like that will come back at some point. And so I think that's what gives me hope of like, yeah, this is a kind of a downer right now, but tides will turn. And there will be like another kind of revolution at some point as it relates to sexuality and possibly particularly masturbation at some point. We're just not in it right now.
I feel like we are in it and we are part of the charge because, so this brings me to my question, how does white nationalism and the rise of fascism relate to masturbation? Because I find it in these Proud Boy, Patriot Prayer, white nationalist, men's rights groups, dickheads, that are very scary and dangerous, like at me, because I know they would assault me if given the chance, but they also think I'm dirty and disgusting.
Right.
So.
Yeah, but there's definitely a connection there with their beliefs, their racist beliefs and their beliefs about masturbation. So. Generally, like white supremacists are very preoccupied with birth rates. They really want to make sure that they are making enough racist babies to keep their white race alive. So that's a larger conspiracy theory with them of like white genocide, that they're being bred out, right? And so that's why they're opposed to migration, because they feel like that's a conspiracy that's intentional as a way to encourage interracial reproduction. And white people are going to be wiped off the planet because of that. And so they think this is all planned. And so that's their conspiracy of like white genocide. Where porn comes into this, and masturbation as an offshoot of that, is that they believe porn was created by Jews to annihilate white people.
No way. Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's like something Cartman on South Park would say. That's insane. Right. Like, oh my God.
And this is why I'm the target of a lot of anti-Semitism online. I'm not Jewish. But I don't know if they just assume I am or
they're
just,
like, he's got a funny last name and dark
right.
hair.
Yeah. Because yeah, like a lot of times they do like a very close up shot of my face and like, see, it's always, you know, and I was like, what are you seeing? but it's like, yeah, where they have they love using memes. And it's like I feel like the old man because I have to like Google what this meme means, and like where it came from.
Because a lot of these nofappers are like 22, 25. Yeah. It's men, males, boys that came of age while Trump was president. And there was a lot of that kind of like fake masculinity bullshit media being created and shared. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm constantly like Googling just to try to make sense out of their insults toward me. So
when my child is 18, I might ask her to help me like, or yeah, explain some of the like hate shit I'm getting thrown. Cause I'm like, what is this? What does this mean? The slang right here.
Yeah. And why is like SpongeBob holding a Star of David? And why is this being like sent to me in like clearly like not a nice way, but I don't fully get the reference here.
Yeah. But something's happening, but I don't understand. Yeah.
So that's the conspiracy theory that they think Jews create and distribute porn to annihilate white people. And how this works, according to this ridiculous racist conspiracy theory is that they think it makes white men weak just because they believe that masturbation and porn use like makes you physically weak. And so therefore you cannot fight for a white ethno state. And also that you're going to become less attractive to white women. And then the one-two punch here is that the porn also depicts interracial sex scenes in which now white women are going to become sexually attracted to non-white men. And ultimately this leads to the procreation concerns that they have and the white genocide concerns that they have.
And this feeds really, really nicely into a lot of women's concerns, sex negative women, where like their survival in a monogamous heterosexual married relationship relies on the man wanting her around and being attracted to her. So if he's in theory fucking or interested in other women, her safety and survival might feel threatened. Like this is a core thing that I think a lot of women deal with, where they're like, he's going to spend money on you, not me. He's going to get off to you, not me. How does this endanger me? Even if it's not an emotional jealousy thing, this is something I witness as a sex worker. So the really, it really supports each other in kind of a toxic monogamy way where it's like, you can't masturbate and I can't masturbate. And if one of us does, there's something wrong with the relationship. That's
Okay.
So do you have any, if you don't, it's okay. Or if you can't share. Do you have any masturbation horror stories or funny anecdotes? I know you love a horror story.
Right. Yeah, no horror stories, fortunately. An amusing anecdote that I have from childhood that when I started masturbating, I was prepubescent.
Weird. Yeah. Like, that's common.
It's very, very common. But I remember being, like, driven to masturbate for the purpose of orgasm prior to even hitting puberty. So I was having orgasms, but no ejaculation. I remember one time when I was masturbating in the living room. I don't know where my family was, but probably like upstairs, but I was just in the middle of the living room with like my feet up on the fireplace.
Because you were probably like, what, 8 or 9? Like,
yeah, I was probably 8 or 9.
Kids don't have the awareness.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I can't see them, so I'm alone. The whole house is mine. Right. Whereas, like, they're just in the other room. Like, what's Eric doing in there? But I remember the first time any kind of fluid came out, and it was just, like, a drop. Clear drop. It had some tackiness to it, and it was just at the urethral opening. And this is kind of, like, on brand for me that I would later, like, 40 years later, 35 years later, write a book about the science of masturbation. I got so excited that I ran downstairs, got my little kid science kit that had a microscope in it, because I just learned about in biology lesson of like sperm cells. I was like, I bet this is sperm. And so I take the sample on a little like specimen slide, and I put it under the microscope. And of course, the microscope is so weak, it's basically like a toy. I'm not seeing anything in it, but I'm convinced like, oh yeah, this is sperm. And I was like so proud of myself. And so that was like a very positive moment, but very nerdy first ejaculation.
Wow, that is wholesome and unique. I mean, I measured the depth of my vagina with a pen I was prepubescent, because I kept hearing about the length of penises and penis erections. And I was like, well, if they have length, then I must have depth. I want to know my depth. This is before I knew that it like changes when you're aroused.
Right.
Oh, that's cute.
That's scientific curiosity.
Yeah, that's great. A little scientist. Yeah, see, you're doing what you were meant to do. The interests are real. We went where our interests lie.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So did writing this book make you feel any kind of way about culture or things from your childhood? Because like I loved Dr. Drew. I listened to Loveline with him and Adam Carolla. It was kind of an inspo for when I started podcasting. I was like, I want to answer information, but also make it funny. So I was so bummed to read. I was reading your book, DIY, and recalling that he was in that like celebrity rehab show where he was anti-sex, anti-porn.
Right. All the above.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting with Dr. Drew because I never really had a positive opinion of him. And so it was easy for me to kind of poke fun of him in the book. That sex rehab show was ridiculous. I've taught classes on like clinical sexuality, and we've watched a couple of those episodes to critique it primarily from the ethics, from like a therapeutic ethics perspective of
it. Makes sense.
But I remember with Dr. Drew, this was probably either high school or college. Like I was aware of like Loveline. I would see it on MTV as I was like channel surfing. But the only time that I listened to it, and it was just like a one and done thing, like he had his opportunity, he disappointed me, I never went
he
back
blew it.
Kind of formed Ooh. This opinion. And it was yeah. about masturbation. There was a Ooh. Caller, a woman, who's concerned about her husband that she caught or overheard him masturbating like in the bathroom, and he was saying some guy's name.
Oh.
And she was concerned that he's gay, he's closeted or bi, right? Yeah. Not she didn't know this, kind of his sexual orientation. She was very right. concerned, like, why is he saying a guy's name?
I'd be interested as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, curiosity, yeah. like what's going on here?
Something's new, oh, yeah.
Part of him that I wasn't aware of, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Drew's response to this was so off the wall. I was like, and you know, I was just in college, so I was not really trained in this yet, but I knew like he was way, way off base, both from like a clinical psych perspective as well as a sexuality perspective. He thought that, no, he's not gay, but he's probably having a psychotic episode. And that he's, what? Yeah, he's responding what? To external stimuli that is not there. Or in this case, it would be internal stimuli. But he's responding to stimuli that is not there. And so some guy in his hallucination that he's responding to.
Like, oh, like he's having like a schizophrenic like episode.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah. And I was like, that's the simplest explanation. And oh. Not that he's just having an immersive experience with masturbation, that he's vocalizing something that would be pretty common. Wow. And what's funny was that the woman was actually relieved.
Oh, my. Well, at least yeah. he's not gay or cheating. He's just
right,
having
exactly.
psychosis.
That was her relief. And Dr. Drew was like, no, this could actually be very, very severe. Like, he could have a psychotic disorder. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He was just vocalizing a fantasy.
Wow.
And from that point on, I was like, yeah, maybe you're good with like the STI stuff, the more medical side, but for behaviors, I don't know. I don't know where that was coming from.
No kidding. What a bust. Yeah, yeah. I am really curious. What do you remember what year this was? Because I'm trying to think of when I listened to him.
So if I was in college, early 2000s, probably between 2000 and 2003.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think when I started listening to it on the radio, but yeah, missed that one.
Yeah, that was a bummer, and it kind of like just formed that impression of Dr. Drew that I've had ever since.
Good for you. Yeah, no, I'm not a fanboy anymore. It's okay. We don't need heroes. We don't need childhood heroes.
They'll disappoint.
All your heroes will disappoint. Okay, so thank you for being here, and.
Thank
One
you.
Last question I ask every guest. Do you have any sex tips for our audience?
Well, less of a like sexual behavior tip. And I think the take home message from the book is really just about liberating masturbation from negative attitudes about masturbation. So I often get asked, like, if everybody masturbated more, would the world be a better place? And I'll be like, no, not really, because pretty much it's pretty common to masturbate and the world is the way it is. But I think the world would be better if we had better attitudes toward masturbation. So our behavior more aligns with healthier attitudes. And I think that could improve things on multiple levels, individual, relationally, and even on a social level. So I would say of just start, you know, to work on recognizing masturbation as just a moment of pleasure. Nothing more, nothing less. You don't have to justify it because it's going to provide like all these health benefits, and you don't have to avoid it out of concern. It's going to create all these health problems for you. It's just a moment of behavior. Do it as often as you would like, that you would naturally desire to do it. That can be daily to not at all. And, you know, it's just your body. Do as you please. Enjoy yourself.
There you go. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for being here. That's great advice. Thank you, Dr. Sprenkel, Dr. Eric Sprenkel. Also, if I may say so, you have a lovely wife, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and that only comes up, like, I just want to know, like, was there a part of you that, like, I'm sure people comment and they're like, oh, you're probably gay or single, and you're like, actually.
I get the gay. A lot of people think I'm gay. The few times that I've posted photos of her or us together, yeah. People like
overwhelming
those
support. Yeah, no.
Yeah, and the only ones that kind of hurt my feelings are the ones that are like completely shocked that she's attractive. I'm like, well, what do you think that says why? About me? When you
why? Yeah, why like, would you be?
It's like, maybe we're a little bit of a mismatch. Like, I think she's beautiful, but
not at all. You're both
not
lovely.
Beauty and the Beast, I don't think. But
no, hot cemetery couple.
Yeah, yeah, we are a hot cemetery couple. I'll go with
you
that.
Are.
Thank you for that. I'll tell her.
Yes, this is the masturbation and sexuality episode with Dr. Eric Sprenkel. Find him, drsprenkel.com. Find his book, DIY, The Wonderfully Weird History and Science of Masturbation. Until next time.